Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Many thanks to the technical guru, Mr. Dennis Johnson, for kicking us off. It is now 2 minutes past the hour of 10. It's time for us to get going for the Brass Tacks Hour. And we want to thank Larry Mears for taking us through the morning, replacing Carol, who is normally AM Roberts. I imagine today she might be AM PM Roberts. With any luck. So a special thanks to the team this morning. As I said, Mr. Dennis Johnson, I'm here, Peter Wickham, and we are with you until 1:30. Today is the 23rd day of October, 2018. And of course, you can call us on 434-1790. You can email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com, or you can WhatsApp using 266-IVOB. That's the number that you normally use. I want to get to the calls, but I have a couple of quick reflections, beginning with the current situation in Barbados regarding the construction of roads, or the reconstruction of roads, or the repair of roads. I don't want to knock the Minister of Transport and Works. He's hit the ground running, and he's dealt with some very contentious issues that have been with us, mini buses. The roads are in horrible condition. And I'm happy that he's able to get the IADB money moving quickly to be able to repair some of the roads. I did have a moment of concern, I must tell you, when I heard the announcement from CEO Williams that they were going to be paving the roads during the day. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, and I'm happy that good sense has prevailed. And one day later, we are hearing that that road repair will be done during the night. I think it makes an entirely great quantum of sense, and it's highly logical that we should have this type of work being done at night. You cannot close down a main artery like that, especially during school term, while school is in, and expect there not to be major disruption. So I'm happy that good sense has prevailed. One wonders why it could not have been prevailed before the fact and not necessarily after the fact. As far as layoffs are concerned, well, we're just watching to see how things go. I think you know my views on the situation already. It is almost an inevitability. I think it has to be approached with some level of caring, but the reality is that it will have to happen. And I think that the powers that be need to understand, quite frankly, that there's only so much that you can do. Ultimately, when it hits home, it's going to hit hard. But nonetheless, we need to empathize, we need to be supportive, and we need to see what we can do to deal with the situation. My main focus this morning, though, is regional. And I want to go first to St. Kitts, where over the course of last week, we published a public opinion poll showing that the Team Unity government of Prime Minister Dr. Timothy Harris was moved to a position of popularity, where before they were an unpopular government, they were no more popular than the opposition St. Kitts and Nevis Labour Party under Denzel Douglas. Over the weekend, Denzel Douglas shot back rapidly at me as a pollster. He said that the polling had no credibility. I lacked credibility. He said I was a push pollster and that the poll was unscientifically designed, all because it said that he was less popular than Prime Minister Dr. Timothy Harris. My comment in relation to the whole situation is that Dr. Douglas has to understand that, you know, sometimes pollsters will give you information that you like, and sometimes it will give you information that you don't like. And he's liked the information that I've been providing over the last 15 years. And it's unfortunate that we've come to a stage now where all of the credibility that I had before, apparently I no longer have, because I have rendered a result that does not suit him. But I would say to him that I think the result is saying to me that the people of St. Kitts and Nevis have an interest in a leader that's more youthful, have an interest in a leader that's fresh and new, and that is the direction that the country seems to want to go in. Clearly, the Labour Party has not grown their support. They may have been relying on charters, they may have been relying on the overseas vote, but certainly they need to grow their support on the ground if they're going to have any chance in the next election. So Dr. Douglas and your team, is not about Peter Wickham. It is about what you have been doing in relation to the management of your affairs in St. Kitts and Nevis. My final comment relates to Antigua and Barbuda, where we'll have a referendum on the 7th of November. We did a poll, has not been released yet, but the general sense on the ground from people seems to be that the support for the CCJ is somewhat fractured. It's all over the place. However, there appears to be sufficient support at this stage to carry it through. My concerns really are with the naysayers, the people who don't support the CCJ, and my concern is with those who may feel that there's something sinister about it. And I had a fairly extensive conversation yesterday on the radio regarding such. And I'm certainly happy to have similar conversations today. Looking at my views and opinions on why I think the CCJ is a good thing, I am not of the front door short variety that believes it's a bad thing. So maybe we can discuss all of those. We're going to take a break now. And when we come back, we can have our conversations and we can start to look at the issues of the day. Do stay with us. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks 4341790. Or should I say welcome to Down to Brass Tacks 4341790. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, morning, ma'am. First up, how are you doing?
Oh, not so good, but, you know, all in all, how are you?
Hey, man, I am great. What happened? That you're not good? Knees giving trouble?
Nah, the old age catching up.
I guess it was bound to happen.
You know what I mean?
You can catch up with me just now, too, so.
Well, yeah. You know that, innit? You're 21, so you're okay.
True.
Yesterday, I waited so long to speak to Mr. Johnson, but never mind. Don't keep the people waiting too long today, okay, Peter?
I'm going to try to keep it moving fast.
Anyway, what I'm talking about, we, the consumer out here, are not getting a good deal from the supermarket. Mm-hmm. And there's, don't say we could go to a shop around, because when you used to go into one or two shops, you find the prices are really bad. And they're putting up things secretly, and they're not putting anything down. Everything is up, Peter. And it's not fair. The NSRL, whatever, you come off the shelf. Okay? And it's, the prices are more higher than before. And I think something got to be done, and I think, I don't know, the government, and is very full at the moment, too full to angle this one at the moment, but this one is really important to tell the supermarket people, come on, man, your prices are too high, and it's not right. The NSRL, come off. Don't tell me nothing about shipment or this or not. It's really high, Peter. Use shop. You could see the prices, yes?
Yeah, well, you know, you're saying it. I see the prices.
Yeah, because you shop, don't you?
I
you
shop,
go to the supermarket, yes.
I have to admit, though, Winnie, I don't pay a lot of attention.
Oh, but you.
What I do is I see the cumulative price at the end, and I just ball.
Yeah, but Peter, right. You got to. Well, as you as a moderator now,
so I reserve my crisis to the checkout counter. I don't reserve. If I was to have a crisis at every single sticker, I would probably be in constant shock. So I just
anyway,
wait until, you know.
You ever go home and look at the bill you have before and the bill you're paying now?
But I look at the bill at the checkout counter and it's always be high.
Jesus.
No,
anyway,
Winnie, the reality is that it's rough. But then when you think about it and you look back at the bill, for example, you look at the quantum of value-added tax that's added to the bill, it's significant.
So, it's really ridiculous, though.
The cost of living has been a problem in Barbados for a while, and it's just not getting better. Do you shop in the market at all?
I do shop in the market. I have a good friend of mine named Bridget and her husband, Fresh, and you know, they look after us. But it's not that this shop in the market is only what you can buy, the ground food. But you got to
buy that's all you should be eating? Well, you want eating processed food?
No, I don't. I really don't eat from tins, you know. I really don't buy tin stuff. I really, the only thing I might buy is that thing called sardine and something so, but because it's
grown,
good for the character.
Grown
but,
food.
Yeah, but
my thing is that I don't
anymore.
Do it. I don't do it a lot, but I've often been told that you can do very well if you shop in the market. You know, you buy Whole Foods and provisions, grown food and such like that. Shop in the fish market for your fish. And, you know, these days you can get chickens from, so many people are doing chickens in the backyard and selling them, you know, informally, that in many instances you can do a lot better. I mean, when you go to the supermarket, you will pay higher prices.
But it's not the prices, but they're putting up it too high. It's
yeah, but
really
mom, as consumer, Winnie, we need to be in a position to say, look, enough is enough.
But as I say, that's true, because one person cannot do it. You got to take a good lot of people to boycott certain things and say, we're not doing it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the next thing as well, too, you know, these stores now, and you go and shop, right? In the store, you take something on credit. You know, and if you're late by a day, you know, they're charging you $15
and $20.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on that I think they're really taking the wee dough with the people in this country. But by the way, the road works now. I don't think they should have started on the highway there. They should have gone into the roads that are really, really bad, that you can swim in some of the roads. Mm. Those are the roads they should be paving. They should be looking after those roads where your tire bursts up and you lose parts of your car.
I see Dennis shaking his head. I'm not sure what he was saying, but I have to admit that I thought it a bit odd that we started on the main roads and not in the secondary roads. But
well, that's what I'm saying there.
The other argument could be that, look, you know, if you're going to start a major rehabilitation program, it might make sense to start with the major roads, get those sorted.
That's what I'm saying.
No,
that's
because before they break down, and then, because those are easy in a sense, you can shut down a stretch and you can do it in the night. While the secondary roads, a lot of them will require remedial work that will take some time.
Yeah. Sorry, if I may just interrupt. I was shaking my head. I was trying to get a message to you to tell you that I think the IADB loan was for the rehabilitation of that stretch of road and no other.
Okay.
I think that's the challenge.
Okay. So, Winnie, you heard it. You heard it from Dennis himself. The funds were designated for that purpose. Yeah.
Anyway, Peter, someone said to me to tell you they're going to bring you some pudding on South Saturday, okay? Okay, bye-bye.
On Saturday, I shall be in Roseau, Dominica. So I will miss you, Putina, so sadly. And I'm not so sorry. I should put in a plug here that next week, the Creole Festival in Dominica is starting. And it will be the first one since the hurricane, since Hurricane Maria. So Winnie, you and anyone else out there who has some time on their hands, you want to take in some Dominican culture. The Creole Festival is unique in the Caribbean in the sense that there is really nothing else like it. It's not a crop over wine and jam, sadly. It is not a reggae fest like you would see in Jamaica. It is of a completely different type. So you feel free to go down next week, anyone who's listening that may have the slightest bit of interest in the Dominican experience. You may go down to Dominica to see. And it would give you the opportunity to avoid your Saturday pudding and sauce. Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Not too bad at all.
Good, good.
You started off very good. Today, 23rd of October.
Yeah.
Today is the day that our former Minister of Industry and Commerce would be before the court of in the states or whatever you call it.
He's going out of court today?
I'm asking.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't been following too closely.
Well, these are things that we should know. Today the 23rd. I thought it had, if I'm wrong, I would admit, I thought it was adjourned to the 23rd. But I want to utilize the 23rd of October to my good friend Raul Eastman. I wish him a happy birthday on today's date.
Okay.
And it is strange that with all the venom and the support that the Democratic Labour Party is searching for, today is the day that David Thompson died also.
Okay.
23rd of October.
This is a day of great significance for many reasons.
But that's what I mean. But I heard Verla DeVisa on Sunday. She never said anything that the 23rd of October would be the death of former Prime Minister David Thompson.
Well, maybe we celebrate his birth and not his death. Maybe that's
something,
the thing to
something.
Celebrate.
Anyhow, well, if the case is that the 23rd of October is the date that Don Valenis will be appearing in court, and today the 23rd of October the date that David Thompson passed away, those are two good dates that the Democratic Labour Party should keep in their memory. Seeing we have the first minister that was ever held before a court out of Barbados from our little island, 166 square miles. What a significance. All right, let me go on.
I have just been told that were you at school?
Very at the school?
Yeah.
Gradley Adams.
You're at Gradley Adams. Okay.
That's it, Joseph.
I have just been told that I am to also acknowledge the fact that this day, or yesterday, actually Sunday, started what is known as Commemore Week. I don't know what Commemore do to get a week. I don't know where to get a week from.
I don't know, but I know. But I said, we don't have to parade anything. The significance comes out of
of us being.
We have some good, solid people. I love politics. I told Walter, who sat beside me and listened to this, you know, his real life is on, I would say, a radio.
Mm-hmm.
And from school, he was like that, from the farm. He always used to write a lot of stories. Well, you know, all I know, I'm confused sometimes. They call the never I told or whatever it is.
Olatoyo Waldron.
Right.
But let's take the opportunity, in as much as former Prime Minister David Thompson was also a Commemorian, let's take the opportunity, you and I, to wish all of the Commemorians a happy Commemore Week.
There's no problem with that. I can wish everybody a happy.
Let's wish them with all the sincerity in the world a happy Commemore Week.
There's no problem with that.
Let's hope that they are able to produce another Prime Minister soon.
Yeah, my good friend, Bishop Wood, Wilfred Wood, he also went
to Commemore, okay.
Yes, so right. You can't leave out him. He also played cricket for Commemore. Mm-hmm. Good? So that is enough of that. Let us get at the real position now that is confronting the mass of this country pertaining to layoffs. I like to be very logical and truthful in the things that I said. You know, I always talk about Andrew's Factory. That is my lifeblood. In 1955, when we had the hurricane, that is where I rest my head, in the Andrew's Factory. And what you call the Pampasa quarters. I have seen changes.
This is 1955, was which hurricane?
Janet.
And you rested your head in an Andrews?
Yeah.
Okay.
Our house got blown down.
But Andrews was sturdy?
If it was.
Andrews was sturdy enough at the time?
Yes, you had planter. You had overseer quarters. We used to bring it over Pampasa quarters.
Okay.
Where they used to bring the Pampasa from Guyana.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a chemist by the name of Mr. Ellen. They had a house there for him. There was a lot of buildings around Andrews. But we first started in what I call the barn house that IC and the tech was occupying. Okay. And then after the hurricane passed, the manager put us into the Pampasa quarters.
Okay. That's an interesting piece of history there.
Yeah. Yes. But what I am saying here now is that I saw many changes took place around the agricultural sector. You know, there's only one sugar factory now.
Mm-hmm.
And there were.
You know, if I had my way, there wouldn't be none.
Right, but you would like there to be not be any.
That would be my wish, yes.
Yeah, but you're wishing it come true.
We'll see.
But, now, let me go on. That.
But you say that, but I hear that the plans to rebuild Andrews is been shelved.
That was nonsense. Yeah. And what cometh out of a man defileth him. Everybody knew that.
Is it what cometh out of a man?
Defileth him.
Defileth him. His mouth. I see, okay.
It's come out of his mouth. A lot of people have come with grandiose plans, but behind the plans, you would know that something else was there for that.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the Washington, the Washington University, and all that sort of thing. There's plans, but there was all the other motives. Good?
Okay.
Good. Now, let me go on. What I'm saying is that I saw what you would consider a reconstruct at the factory. I saw when, as a young boy, going down to the factory and watching men loading sugar by bag.
Yeah.
Then you move from bag to bulk.
Mm-hmm.
Those people were sent home, right? The factory still go on. Sugar was still being made. I knew when four estates belonging to one person, had its own manager, own bookkeeper, own manager driver, and it gone down to one. Available one overseer. Things changes. What I am saying is that as life goes on, there is a lot of things that are going to change that we have to accept. Mayor Motley, our Prime Minister, she is really in the position now where there are a lot of technological changes coming about. But we had on this radio, I asked about it already, where is the People's Manifesto in order to assist Mayor Motley? Now, I'm going to introduce what I would call change in employment for these people that are being sent home. Now, Peter, if you go to the doctor, how much money you could pay a doctor?
Well,
the least money I believe any patient pays a doctor is $80. You agree with that?
Something like that.
Dennis, Scott, Dennis is familiar with these things. About $80.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're talking about use of fees. And I want to bring in school needs. God, this is an idea that I had, that I put forward to Sir James Tudor years ago. I felt within myself that secondary school should start getting school needs. Now, as you're talking about, because you don't want to talk about agriculture, we can talk about agriculture. As you're talking about agriculture, and you had to set up school meals to feed the secondary schools at a rate at least $10 a week. And taking the supply from the small farmer, you would be in a position to increase the employment in the school meals department instead of laying them off. The other section, and the farmers would get a market to help. Now, let me go and use the fees. The $80 they ask about the boat.
The doctor visit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, if you had to introduce user fees to these clinics, and you charge a patient $10 for a visit and $10 for medication, remember a box of aspirin costs $8. And the medication that they're getting is more expensive than that. So if you, anytime a person going to a clinic and you say, well, you got to take $20, $10 for medication and $10 for visit, there's no way you could pay a doctor $10. So although you're paying, you're not paying the real price. You would eventually have to employ at least two or three cashiers at the clinics to take this money. Now, as far as the hospital is concerned, you would not pay to go to the hospital because it could be emergency. You may not have the money, but after the visit and you're taking medication, you would have to pay at least $10. Therefore, you would employ cashiers again. So that is my fear for today. Other people could bring their ideas, and I hope the Prime Minister is listening, and I'm sure that she could sit down with a panel, discuss these matters, and no person in this country, just the other day you had a boy nearly lost his life for an $800 cell phone. So if you had to pay $10 for a medical visit and $10 for medication, I don't see where the country should cry out, because at the same time, you are trying to increase employment for those people who went home, and with the school needs department, you would also have employment. And that is my fear today from the caller's point of view.
I wanted to just tackle you on the school meals department issue. Contrary to popular belief, I don't really dislike talking about agriculture. I just think that it's a difficult exercise to frame one's economic development around. Well, Barbados is. But if you were to say that you should have school meals at secondary school, I don't have a problem with that. I think it would be a great thing to have school meals right through the school system, free school meals. The challenge is that I don't know that it is something we can afford necessarily. My understanding of the school meals program is that it started originally with milk and biscuits, and it was born out of a theory that was even going right back to the Moyne Commission, where there were so many undernourished children in schools, and the feeling was that we needed to pay some attention to giving them something to eat in the morning, so the milk and biscuits came up, because that was important for them being able to have a good education, being able to have something in their stomach so they wouldn't collapse or fall down or something like that during the course of the morning. That theory makes a lot of sense, and as a result, we have a well-established school meals program that has been developed on top of the milk and biscuits program initially. I think it has worked well. My question is it something that we need to revisit now in light of the fact that the Moyne Commission did their work in the 1940s? Right? We are now into 2018, and the economic situation is different, where we have people enjoying a different lifestyle and being able to afford to do a lot more than they could do. And but my question is, in that context, we may have to ask ourselves, is it a priority to revisit it at the secondary school? Or alternatively, does it make more sense to try to provide facilities whereby students who need assistance can get it in terms of getting the meal.
And if you focus on them
more so than other people, that would make a difference.
No, Peter, let me elaborate on this as a perfect example. Now, I always hear on this radio people talk about healthy eating. Now, I could afford to tell you this because I am in my 60s now, and I have nothing to be ashamed about. I never had money going to school from Paris to Western Jordan. I never had money. A lot of people see me going, but they never knew. There's a lot of children that you will see on secondary school buses. You don't know what they eat. You don't know.
Mm-hmm. So either what they eat or what they don't eat.
Or what they don't eat. Mm-hmm. And the fact remains, you may see children there, and it could be very hostile, and you don't know the reason, because seeing a man walk in the road with a good shirt and pants don't necessarily mean that he had ate anything. He may be as hungry as a dry biscuit.
Mm-hmm.
But to make sure.
But do you think that I am opposing the idea of children getting
No, 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 no. I'm just giving you an example.
Right.
No. I'm not saying that. I know better than that, mm-hmm. Peter. Now, listen. What I am saying that when I walk from Lessinger on afternoon time to go home, people will believe when you left and go home, you can get a healthy meal. When you get home, Sunday, just lemonade and biscuits. And you walk back at the road, nobody knows what you have eaten. What you ate for that lunch time. So I am saying it is time that you talk about healthy eating and run the schools. Make sure that the schools provide cause all of this angriness coming from school children and secondary school. You do not know what is the cause. And I feel in my malnutrition could be responsible for a lot of things, but a man will come and tell you, no, my child is not suffering from malnutrition.
I don't have a difficulty with that. And I think the solution to the problem is for us to spend additional effort inside schools, and I think that primary schools, students need to be tested in terms of nutrition, in terms of their general health, because to me, one of the good things about the immunization program, it has demonstrated that you have a captive audience of children between 4 years and 15 years where they have to be in school. And I think you should use that time while they are captive in school to do several things. And one is you can evaluate nutrition. The other thing is you can evaluate health, and I would also like them to start evaluating the learning potential, and not by, you know, 11 plus exam foolishness, but evaluating it by way of testing for attention deficit disorder, testing for dyslexia and dyspraxia. And to me, if we were to spend some of the resources that we waste in 11 plus exam testing in relation to these things, then we can identify the students who have poor nutrition and we can attempt to fix it. Children who have educational challenges, and we can attempt to deal with those, you know, and that to me is a wise use of the time spent in primary school, so that when a child comes out of primary school, that child has better health and also better education, and they're more useful to themselves. My thing is that school meals can play a part in that. My challenge is that when you say you're going to develop a system that gives school meals to every single child, you often will end up wasting your resources in that regard. If you were to say, okay, the school meals will be provided and we'll pay a fair price for it, you immediately put all of the canteen workers at the schools out of business. And the fact of the matter is that they may provide meals at a cost to the consumer that is less than what it will cost government to do it. Because you can rest assured that if they were able to If you costed the school meals department the ability to produce a meal, I suspect it would be a lot higher than what an individual who sells, in my time it was hamburgers and hot dogs and different things like that, would be able to deliver one for. Anyhow, final word from you, because we have to run. Okay.
All right. When a canteen produce hamburger, then you call that nutritious meat?
No. Huh? No, I wouldn't say so.
But that is why I'm telling you.
Okay.
The head of dollar
is
the healthy meal.
So we define what is healthy, we study what is given, and we determine where remedial action has to take place. That's a simple solution from me. All right, but we're going to have to run. Down to Brass Tacks, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. I got a WhatsApp, an email message I wanted to read from Curtis. This is with respect to the road repairs. And Curtis is saying, Peter, it doesn't matter whether the road work is done at night or whether it is done by day. The fact is that one section of the highway is closed and traffic is reduced to single lane in the opposite direction. The timing of this road work is bad. It could have been done next year during the school long vacation and on weekends leading up to that time. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I know I'm not one of your favorite callers, and I don't...
Why would you think so? You may very well be the favorite.
No. I want to be the favorite of yours, all right?
Not a problem.
Well, good. I hope...
Sir, I don't lack love, you know, both on and off the radio, so I good.
Well, I'm not responding to that neither.
Well, you don't have to. I just tell you as a fact. So I am not going to be weeping and gnashing as a result of the fact that I'm not one of your favorites. Anyhow, go ahead, sir. What do you have for us today?
Yeah. The last administration left a number of roads that was under construction and need to be finished. Now, we've been having a lot of heavy rains recently, not regularly, but recently. I passed some this morning in St. Philip, and they have started going to start to disappear. I would wish that this government would finish those roads, because nobody can say it's nobody constituency no more, because the last government was totally wiped out. And I feel you should look at the roads. I would also like to remind the Minister of Transport and Work that you are now the representative of the whole of Barbados in relation to roads or whatever your ministry have to offer. The second thing is, I heard a number of people saying that they were in government for more than 15 years and getting letters. As I remember it, former Prime Minister Onapa went to Parliament and he said any person who had been in government 4 years or more would be appointed to their post. It only wasn't said. The law was passed in Parliament. Letters started to come out. When the last government came into office, the letters stopped. Now, as my simple mind tells me, despite the letters being stopped, the point is the law was passed in Parliament. Even though you may not have received your letter, as far as I'm concerned, you were appointed. And I feel that those people who have received letters of termination should seek advice on that. They should not let it go on like that. The law was passed. It was passed. People, Barbados got to stop maliciousing in people's business and look after their own business. That was the need to do. Any comments so far?
None, sir.
Now, the CV. We are a country depending on tourism. And among that product is all beautiful beaches. The seaweed have been invading our shores and causing people not to go to the beach. I made a suggestion about going out to sea and gathering that seaweed before it lands. Nobody ain't paying me no money, but I can say this now. When I got to do it, everyone wanted to sail for our tourist industry, then at the way and to gather that seaweed before it lands, unless you're going to have people there ready at all times when it lands to deal with it, there's no other way. None. And why are you saying that? Only people in three-piece suits seem to got brain. Only people from the health and terraces seem to get brain. People like me and other people, we ain't nobody. So nobody don't listen to us.
All right. Thanks a lot, sir. Good to hear from you. This is Dr. Brastocks. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Greetings and salutations, sir.
Greetings and salutations to your good side.
All right. Good to hear you.
Let me to begin my conversation with you by first making some famous statements. It's not the money. It's the principle of the thing. You don't need it in writing. You have my word. You don't look a day over 40. The check is in the mail, and I'll call you later. Mr. Vickham, sir, I shan't be taking up too much of your time. I shall be very brief. Two prominent people appeared in the front page of last Saturday Sun, dated October 20th, 2018, where the sad looks on their faces reminded me of a funeral where the number one fear in life is public speaking. The number two fear is death. This means that if you are to a funeral, you are better in the casket than giving the eulogy. As a result, though, the two union representatives portrayed building the best Barbados together. As I said, I'll be going to be brief. and hear your comments, sir.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling, sir. We're going to take a few messages, and when we come back, we continue with Down to Brass Tacks. So stay with us.